You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hope you had a great weekend, everybody. I survived mine. My son getting married. Some details forthcoming.
And now we go to the...
Just kidding.
877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at DP Show. Best and worst of the weekend, as we always do every Monday. What you saw that you liked, you didn't like. Poll question, play of the day, stat of the day. We'll dive into some of the draft rumors. Albert Breer from the Monday Morning Quarterback will join us. The Falcons have received calls from teams asking about Julio Jones. There's multiple reports out there that the Falcons may be trading Julio Jones later on this summer. We'll ask Albert Breer about that and a few other details. I'm going to tell you what I told you a month ago, and you're starting to see some of these reports come out now. When we first heard that the Niners were moving up, I checked on a source and I said, who are they going after? And my source said, they're going after Mac Jones from Alabama. And my source said, I don't know why they're giving up all of that draft capital to go up and get Mac Jones, but that's what I'm hearing. That's the kind of quarterback that Kyle Shanahan wants in San Francisco. He said, but make sure if you're going to report this, there is someone or someones in the Niner organization, in their draft room, who are trying to convince Kyle Shanahan to take Trey Lance. Now, you had all this speculation that the Niners going to pro days and maybe they'll take Justin Fields. Well, we're coming back to where we were a month ago. Nothing has changed from my source who said Mac Jones, but still thinks there are people or a person inside with influence talking up Trey Lance. Those are the stories that are coming out now. Here we are Monday of draft week. But we'll talk to Albert Breer about separating fact from fiction. Alex Smith, the former number one overall pick, just announced his retirement. I'll ask him what that is like when you're the veteran quarterback, and it happened to him a couple of times. It happened to him in San Francisco. It happened to him in Kansas City. And he knows what Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan, some of these other quarterbacks, you get a little long in the tooth, and all of a sudden you see your team, they draft your replacement. And we'll talk to Alex Smith coming up a little bit later on. This program brought to you by Simply Safe. Simply Safe Home Security. They offer a team of highly trained security experts for what you need the most, when you need them the most. Go to simplysafedan.com today. Customize your system. Get a free security camera. Survived the wedding this weekend. It was great. We love who my son married. In fact, we love her. We like him. But there were a lot of great moments there. And in case you're wondering, did I cry? The answer is yes. I was walking down the aisle. My son is arm in arm with my wife and I. And I got about four rows down. And I could hear people whispering, he's crying. Is he crying? He's crying. And I finally said to everyone in the church, yes, I'm crying. I said it out loud. So we get to our seats. Ceremony begins. I'm doing okay. Ceremony begins. My son's wife walks down the aisle. I get behind my wife. I hold her shoulders and I cry into her hair. So no one can see me. Now, there guys will cry. Guys will weep. Mine was embarrassing. Mine was a full-blown... And I'm thinking, this is a great moment. Now, my son can't look at me. He tells me later, he goes, Dad, I had to tune you out. And then my daughters are looking, and they start crying because I'm crying. One of the groomsmen starts crying because I'm crying. Like I'm ruining the ceremony. Hair and makeup, I am ruining it for all of these women. And so, you know, my wife is like, you know, you got to get it together. Well, I don't know how to get it together in the moment. And, you know, when you see your son walk down the aisle, you see, you know, who he's going to marry. You got all family members there, and it hits you so hard. I can't imagine I talked to my three daughters after, and I said, look, I will bribe you to not have a ceremony. Don't make me give you away. Pick out a car. Pick out a house. I don't want to. I can't do this. But we survived, and I did give a speech at the rehearsal dinner, and I brought my wife up there with me because I said, look, just be there for moral support. In case I start to break down, then you jump in. And so we get up there. She starts saying all of these wonderful things about who my son is marrying. She starts crying, and I go, what are you doing? I say this to her out loud. What are you doing? You're not supposed to be doing this. But I got through the speech, and I did make fun of the father of the bride. I did. I roasted him a little bit.
Oh, dear.
And he's a wonderful person. Chip is a wonderful person. But I roast him. I mean, somebody's got to be roasted, and I roasted him. Of course, to make myself look better, I roasted him.
Does someone have to be roasted?
I don't know. But
it's a wedding. It's a wedding.
I don't know that someone has to be roasted.
I thought if I roasted my future in-law, then it would take away the possibility of me crying. So I'm roasting him. And I show up on the wedding day. Four different guys said to me, hey, you see what Chip's wearing? I go, I said, no, not yet. Oh, he's decked out. I go, okay, how decked out can it be? I got a tux on. So four different people said, you got to see what Father Bride's got on. Well, he's a former naval officer. he shows up. He's right out of a movie. He's got his hat on, or he's got his medals, dress blues. And I go, you have got to be kidding
me.
Like
a Tom Clancy novel.
Yes.
Mayonnaise.
Yeah. Yes. The Hunt for Red October. I mean, he's right there. And I went, okay, shots fired.
Is he the chest full of the little
yes!
colorful things?
Yes. Yes. That's and tough. Then his dad is a Navy guy, shows up, and he's got all of this. His dad brought a sword to cut the cake.
I can already see what these dudes' forearms look like. They're like my thighs.
And if you would have given me 2 hours, I would have gone out and got some military gear. I would have done like camo, Army, Navy store. I would have gotten a helmet. I would have had grenades. Like, I would have enlisted just to be able to top him. And I thought, he got me. Okay, that he changes out of his military uniform. He's performing part of the ceremony of the wedding. He's a deacon. And I went, he went from that, and then he put on the robe. He had, I said, yeah, he crushed me twice. And then we get ready to leave after the ceremony. He gets back in the dress blues, and he looks like $1 million.
And yeah. Then he flew the helicopter to the honeymoon, and he's like, okay, Chip, we get it.
He got into the Black Hawk helicopter.
Okay, Chip.
Yeah, Paul.
If you knew that coming in, you should have brought like Oberman down, a camera crew, and done like a live sports center in the middle of the nuptials. A reminder, everybody.
Yes, Todd.
Do you have to salute, thank him for his service? Are you at ease? What's the situation there for a wedding?
Well, I
weekend?
Wasn't at ease. Let's put it that way. But I will say that his father, 88 years of age, spent his military career on submarines. He brings in his sword for them to cut the cake. I didn't know it was bring your own sword reception. BYOS.
Is that like where you're checking your pockets like you're missing your keys?
Like, what's my sword right now?
I think I had a penknife with me, and they brought in a sword. But, yeah, you know, shots not fired, but, the message was sent loud and clear. But it was a wonderful moment. I said to my daughters, you don't have to get married. Like, you don't. Your mom would prefer, but you do not. And here's another one. Chip, father of the bride, knows that I cry all the time. Gave me a monogram hanky, his initials, for me when I weep. When I cry.
And then he dropped and gave you 20 push-ups just to show you could.
Patrick. Oh, boy. Welcome to draft week. We're ready to go. I'm all fired up here.
Did you have fun, though? Like, fun?
I did. You know, I'm so proud of my son. Like, you know, all the things that he's done, I said, the most important thing you've ever done that makes us the proudest is who you pick to marry. Like, he found somebody. And it's not that easy. But, oh, my God. You know, you're able to have conversations, and now it's like it's serious stuff, and like you can't scold him for things.
Wait, is this? I didn't realize we were rolling it.
I didn't know you had actual audio.
I asked you to wear a lav mic. would you characterize it as crying or sobbing?
It was sobbing.
Or wailing?
No. Well, wailing, sobbing, not crying.
Heaving?
There could have been some heaving.
I heard reports of heaving.
Well, there were some of the groomsmen were heaving before the wedding. But, oh, my God. And I forgot, you know, guys who are young can drink. They're like, hey, we're going to go out and play cornhole for 5 hours. And we're going to drink. And I went up. I said, well, I'll have a beer, and I got to go take a nap. Oh, I'm the artist who formerly known as Dan Patrick. But, yeah, it was great. Wonderful. And for anybody out there, if you're going to go through this, or I don't care what you think, how you're going to feel, what your reaction is going to be, it will hit you so hard, and you cannot hide. If you could have paid, if I could have paid for somebody to make it all go away, all of my tears, I would have paid $50,000, because when you're holding on to your wife and you're crying into her hair, the back of her head, and I'm making a mess out of everybody. Yes, yeah, see.
Band DJ?
There was a DJ.
Did you dance?
I danced one dance with my wife.
Smart.
That was it. Well, Chip in his dress blues, they have a whole routine with him and his daughter.
Turns out he's a flamenco dancer.
he's a former professional ballroom dancer.
Yeah, who knew?
And he's out there, and their, you know, brown-eyed girl comes on, and they're spinning and the whole thing. And I said to my wife, there is no bleeping way. Nope. And then, you know, they played a song for my son and my wife, and then everybody could join them on the dance floor. And then that was it. I said, I'm going out to the bar. I gotta go. And I went out and ordered. I wanted to have like a bourbon. Like, I had to prove that I was a man.
Yeah.
Because I was not a man the whole weekend. It's like, what is wrong with you? And I ordered a bourbon. I was like, I'm going to do a shot of bourbon. Went into the gift shop. I bought a bottle of vodka and a bottle of gin. You know, it was held at a distillery. And so I thought, I got to man up here somehow, some way, because I am folding. I'm melting. Yes, Todd.
So they're all mesmerized by Chip and want to hear all his Navy stories, and the occasional person passes by you and says, what do you think the Niners are going to take at 3?
No, it'd be like, Chip, tell us when you were on the destroyer, and, you know, and then, you know, Patriots going to move on? Yeah, I mean, hey, if Justin Fields slips, you think the Patriots? Chip, tell us again about your face-to-face with the enemy and...
One's got government clearance. The other has the insider of what the Vikings are going to do.
Yeah. Oh,
what's going on with my Yankees there? It's a tough start for them.
Yeah. I did get an obligatory sports question because I think people felt like, I don't even know what to say to this guy because I was just a puddle of water. Like, you know, some guy at the very end goes, I feel like I got to ask you a question about my Patriots. And I go, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, let me tell you. All right, McLovin, you got a poll question for me today?
Well, I was going to just ask, is it cool to cry at weddings for a man? I think you've made it cool. I think it's cool now.
Okay, crying is fine.
Oh, cry. Okay, this.
Yeah. Openly grieving. Like you would have thought I was at a funeral. Dan Marley and the Wailers.
But you sort of have this energy of like, you survived. You came back in, like you're telling the story, and you're like... But we made it.
Yes.
Somehow we got out of there alive. Like, it's like your son's wedding. Somehow he got out alive.
It sounds like something Chip would have said when he was in the military that
right.
got out alive. I'm talking about getting out of a wedding weekend alive. He was probably in Nam. Meanwhile, I'm at a reception at a distillery. Somehow I got out alive. Yeah. Should get a medal for this.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yes. Yes, McLovin.
So we got two poll options. We can do the big baseball topic of the day, which I think you know what it is.
Yeah.
Or we could do draft.
This was Madison Bumgarner, who
yes.
threw a no-hitter. Well, he didn't allow a hit in seven innings.
Right. The poll question is, what team is he actually on?
Yeah. There are a lot of us who didn't know that Madison Bumgarner was on Arizona.
No.
I think he got traded late in the year, pitched about six games, and I was like, wait, he threw one. Wait, no, he's not on the Diamondbacks. He's with the Giants. He's always going to be on the Giants. So then he's not on the Giants. By the way, the Dodgers and the Padres cannot play enough for me. That is good stuff. We'll have some thoughts on Trevor Bauer and Fernando Tatis. And I love it. It's great. What else do you have, Michael?
Well, I'm waiting for you to drop some draft nuggets on us. The question is, who are they going at number three? Is it the Niners going to take Mac Jones or Trey Lance? Or you could ask, who would you take at three? Is there a right answer or a wrong answer here?
Well, as I started the show and gave you that information.
Nothing. Yeah, but I want to know which one. You're telling me it's
no,
one
I,
or the
I,
other.
I, first of all, I'm not trading up to get Mac Jones with everything I gave up. But it feels like they did. Even Trey Lance. It feels like you could have gotten them at five or six or seven. But, I don't know who values them as much as the Niners do. And look, I've always said, and I don't want to be hypocritical, you find your quarterback, not a quarterback. And too many teams draft a quarterback and not their quarterback. If Kyle Shanahan has his guy, which I hope he does, how do you make the trade and then you're not quite sure who they're going to take? Or you get the feeling you're not quite sure who they're going to take. I think if you move up knowing who you're moving up to get. Now, you don't have any competition with the Jets and the Jags, but it felt like you could get either of those quarterbacks a little bit later on. Yeah, McLovin.
I have one other poll question. It's an impossible question, but who is most likely to be a bust out of this group of five quarterbacks? If you had Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, and Justin Fields, is there any way to predict bustability out of those five?
Bustability.
Because someone's going to bust. Maybe
yes.
three of them.
Yes. Oh, more than likely, you're going to have at least two that don't. You might have two really good players bordering on being all pros, perennial all pros, maybe a Hall of Famer in here. Then you're going to get quarterbacks who are sort of on the edge of, can they prove themselves over their first 4 years? Do they get a second contract with the team that drafts them? And then you're going to get a quarterback where you probably go, wow, did teams miss? It happens just about every draft. Yeah, Paul.
Also, remember Seton's hot new segment, Bust or Busted. It depends who drafts these guys. Because if you would have said the day Mitch Trubisky was drafted by the Bears, will he work out? What are the odds that a Bears quarterback is going to work out or a Jets quarterback is going to work out? There's some math to this. There's some history to this.
Yeah, I have doubts about Zach Wilson, but I think it's natural to have doubts about Zach Wilson because I have doubts about the Jets. And a lot of times somebody's success or failure is systemic, that it's an organization that is buttoned up, will prepare you. But if you get a new coach, same organization. And that's where Zach Wilson is coming in and being asked to do, well, what every Jets quarterback taken in the top 10 is asked to do, and that's save the team. Hey, can you be the next Joe Namath? And I don't know, like Zach Wilson is going to go in there. All right, how many great games did he give us? How many good games? Is he healthy? Is he going to get bigger? You know, Trevor Lawrence will add weight. Justin Fields will. Trey Lance will. They'll be bigger. So I have no idea with Zach Wilson. But I think you have to have some skepticism here just because you know not everybody is going to succeed. And the organization you go to is so important. Because if Patrick Mahomes had gone to the Jets, he would not be an MVP. Not right now. As great as he is, as we've seen, when you gave him a pedestrian offensive line, he got exposed. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers exposed him. It happens. Every great quarterback goes through this. And you saw what the Chiefs did in the offseason. They had a great offseason. They bolstered their offensive line. That's all I need. If I'm the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes is not going to be pressured or sacked, then we're going to be back in the Super Bowl. And I truly believe that. All right, we'll take a break. Albert Breer will join us. Is Julio Jones on the move? Does he have a good feel of what's happening at number three and even number four at that, if we're going to be bringing up Kyle Pitts or do the Falcons draft Matt Ryan's successor? And a little later on, Alex Smith will join us, now the retired quarterback. We'll take a break, settle on our poll question. Phone calls are always welcome. Best and worst of the weekend. We'll be back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. It is draft week. This is where you start to get real information, just to let you know. But we were scheduled to have Mac Jones on today. And then all of a sudden, late yesterday, Fritzy gives us word that Mac Jones can't join us because he has to talk to other teams today. A bunch of other teams. Now, we started speculating, like, okay, Mac Jones, does he have to talk to other teams? Does he know he's being taken by San Francisco? Can he say through his agent, hey, I'm not going there, I'm going to San Francisco? Or are we reading too much into this? I'm not sure. But when we got that, you know, information yesterday, we immediately, what's this mean? He's got a bunch of teams was the word that was used there. Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter, lead content strategist for the Monday Morning Quarterback. He joins us. What do you make of that story that Mac Jones was going to be available for us today? And then we were told he can't. He's talking to a bunch of teams.
I think the Niners have him right where they want him. Kyle's been reluctant to share information with even people in the building. I mean, I can tell you that for a fact, Dan. And part of, you know, his process, and I think this is smart, when they went through January and February and Kyle assigned out five coaches and a bunch of scouts to look at the five first-round quarterbacks, was that Kyle didn't share his opinion on the quarterbacks with any of those guys because he didn't want them to be affected by what his opinion was. You know, like that they would think, okay, I got to think like Kyle, so I'm just going to agree with whatever he thinks. So, you know, Kyle's kept his cards close to the vest through this process. And, I can tell you that at both Ohio State and North Dakota State, for those second pro days for Justin Fields and Trey Lance, the Niners had a good amount of control, to the point where their quarterbacks coach, Rich Scangarillo, was running the latter part of both of those workouts. And so, I think Mac Jones is the leader in the clubhouse when they made the trade on March 29th. But part of the process for them was, let's see, going through a full process, if either of the other two who are more physically talented can catch up to him. And, you know, the fact that they have Mac Jones in the dark now, 3 days out, doesn't really surprise me because of the way they've handled this whole process.
But do you think they made that deal initially a month ago without knowing who they were going to take at the number three pick overall?
Well, I think Kyle had an idea of what he was going to do at the time. Whether enough has happened since then to move him off of that, I don't know. And I can't tell you for sure that it was Mac Jones. I'm just reading tea leaves and what other people who know this stuff really well, you know, think that I've talked to over the course of the last month. So do I think he had a strong idea of what he wanted to do when they made the trade? Yeah, I think Kyle had a strong idea of what he wanted to do. But again, like, you know, I've got pretty good evidence that he hasn't shared it with a lot of people. And he wanted to have like an open, real process. And when John Lynch pulled that trade off, you know, when they make the deal with Chris Greer and the Miami Dolphins to go and get the third pick, I know part of the logic for them was, we want to be able to do everything out in the open. We want to be able to set up a second pro day for Trey Lance, set up a second pro day for Justin Fields, and go through all the Zoom meetings and all the different, you know, machinations that you go through with any prospect. respect without having to hide our intentions. And so, you know, I sort of look at this, Dan, as they knew they were taking. Would it be worth going through all of this when everybody has a pretty good idea of who the first two quarterbacks to go are going to be?
Well, the only thing, and I'll go back to what a source told me when they made this deal, and that was that Kyle liked Mac Jones, someone or someones in their draft room, in the organization, were trying to convince them of Trey Lance. So here we are a month later, and that information has resurfaced as if it's new information, and it's not.
Yeah, and Trey Lance, like, I'll tell you this, Dan. I mean, you know, I make phone calls the like in the summer to kind of try to figure out who the next set of quarterbacks are going to be, because at that point, like, you know, a lot of teams like have gone through, all right, our initial draft meetings, here are players we have to watch. And when I did that with Trey Lance last summer, and this is before we had any idea they were going to move off of Jimmy Garoppolo, trade up, any of that, more than one team pointed out to me, he's an ideal scheme fit for Kyle Shanahan. Now, there's a lot you got to wrap your head around with Trey Lance. I would argue that the difference in competition between North Dakota State and the teams they play might be larger than the difference in competition between Alabama and the teams they play. They beat the crap out of everybody. You know what I mean? Like, so Trey Lance wasn't in a lot of critical situations. He wasn't playing from behind a lot. He didn't throw the ball a lot. You didn't see him in a lot of the situations you want to see him, you know, coming into the NFL. So, like, I think part of this for the Niners is, you know, here in Mac Jones, we see somebody who's shown us a lot of what we want to see. And then over here, we've got Trey Lance, who's a really good schematic fit for what we want to do and can bring a lot of things to the table that'll really open up Kyle Shanahan's offense. We need to decide if we can get him there with the other stuff. And to Trey Lance's credit, like, my understanding is, like, he's come across as very, very football smart in all of his meetings, which I know is going to appeal to Kyle Shanahan and the Niners.
We're talking to Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter and, of course, works for the Monday Morning Quarterback. You know, trying to handicap all of this and with these quarterbacks, you know, and I always say, you know, my logic philosophy is get your quarterback, not a quarterback. And a lot of times these GMs will say, we got to get a quarterback, not your quarterback. If I said you had to bet on one of these not working out in the NFL, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, who would you pick?
I think Trey Lance is the iffiest. Just because I think it's the biggest projection. And the hit could be really big too, you know? So if you hit on him, like, I mean, like, and I think the best comp for him is Josh Allen. That's the one I hear over and over and over again. Trevor Lawrence is a generational prospect. I think he's separate from the group. I mean, Zach Wilson, I think the majority of teams have him number two, but I've talked to some teams that have Justin Fields number two. So,
see, you know, Zach Wilson, I don't know about Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that he had a very good year and he can roll left and throw right at a pro day and throw it 50 yards. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And he's going to the Jets. I mean, you know how this winning and losing is systemic. And I wonder about that when you put him in a situation like that. Trey Lance could end up going to, a good team.
So much of this is situational, right, Dan?
Yes.
I mean, like, if you want to bet on, you know, Zach Wilson with the Jets or Trey Lance with the Niners, regardless of who they are as players, who are you betting on?
I'm betting on Trey Lance.
Because he's going to be throwing to Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle.
Yes.
And he's got Trent Williams blocking for him. And he has the best running game in the league and a really, really good defense. And they don't have to ask the world of him.
Other than
you know, like, I mean, but so much of this is situational. There are so few quarterbacks, I think, that come into the league. And Andrew Luck, I think, is a good example of it. But there are so few quarterbacks that come into the league that can actually overcome bad circumstances when they're young players. You know, we talk about Patrick Mahomes, and I'm not saying Patrick wouldn't have made it otherwise. But look at his situation. He was dropped into a team that was, you know, had a coach who'd been building there for 5 years, a guy who is one of the best play callers and quarterback developers of our generation, right? And Andy Reid, throwing to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. He's got Pro Bowl level tackles and Eric Fisher and Mitch Schwartz. He comes into the league, a kid he gets drafted with, and Kareem Hunt wins the rushing title. I mean, there's just, I think so. I think sometimes we look at the quarterbacks and we say, like, okay, like, this guy's going to be counted on to change everything for this franchise, when really, whether or not they make it rides a whole lot more on what situation they're being dropped into.
I said earlier, if Mahomes goes to the Jets, he's a curiosity. Like, we go, boy, that guy looks like he has talent, but they're not a very good team. Or if he was in Jacksonville, you know, to start, we would look at him as a curiosity. We wouldn't say he's the future of the sport. And I think he got into the right situation. And one or two of these quarterbacks are going to get in the right situation. You know, if Justin Fields goes to New England, or, you know, somebody goes to Atlanta here, you know, they might be in a better situation than Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence. Speaking of Atlanta, this Julio Jones information is starting to sort of trickle out that maybe he's on the block. How up for grabs do you think is Julio Jones?
It depends on what the Falcons are offered.
But is he a second round pick?
I mean, I think for a first round pick, they'd move him, you know, and I think they could agree to a deal this week. Like, I know, like, logistically, they couldn't execute it until June 1st. You know, I think if somebody came along with a first round pick now, you know, like, there's not a lot of precedent for a deal like that. Like, and, you know, you have to make sure, okay, is Julio going to get hurt in the spring? Like, there's stuff like that that can happen. But I mean, it's not all that different than, you know, the Lions and the Rams agreeing to the Matthew Stafford deal in January and then executing it in March, right?
But so, do you trade Julio Jones if you're going to take Kyle Pitts?
I think my guess of right now would be the Falcons are going to take Kyle Pitts. And I think if they had their druthers, they would keep Julio Jones and throw Kyle Pitts into an offense with Julio and Calvin Ridley and three first round picks in the offensive line. And Matt Ryan, who, like, we're talking about Matt Ryan like he's 45 years old. Like, he's still just 35. He's got a few good years left. But their cap situation is just, it's such a mess, Dan, that they have to do something. I mean, as of today, right now, they don't have enough room to sign their draft class. And they've already mortgaged contracts for Matt Ryan, for Jake Matthews, and for Deion Jones. And so something's got to give here. And, I mean, for Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith, the new guys in charge there, really a big piece of this is balancing mortgaging another contract. And Julio's contract's a big one. Mortgaging another contract versus maybe just getting that contract off the books and then getting another player in either this year or next year who's going to be cost controlled for the next 4 years, which can really help you from a cap standpoint.
People try to tell you what the Patriots might be doing or could be doing. Mm-hmm. And it's all speculation because they never let any information out. But you're Boston based. Do you have any idea what Bill Belichick is capable of doing in the first round?
So, like, they've explored, they've made the exploratory phone calls about going up into the top 10. And, you know, I know they've talked to Atlanta, they've talked to Carolina. And look, like, I don't want to make that big a deal out of that because these things happen this time of year, you know? And I don't think they're down the road with any of those teams quite yet, at least to my knowledge. But I do think they're in sort of a similar spot to where they were in 2012. And if you remember, they made it to the Super Bowl in 11, but their defense was really, it was a mess. And that was the year, if you remember, they had Gronkowski and Hernandez. And I think Brady either won the MVP or had an MVP type of season. But they were playing Julian Edelman on defense, you know? And so if you go back and you look at that year, then everybody's Bill trades down. He traded up twice that year, traded up for Dante Hightower and traded up for Chandler Jones to try and fix their defense. Both those guys were hits. You know, a couple of years later, the defense is completely fixed. So I think, you know, if you look at the quarterback position, I'd sort of line it up like that. Now, like, how do they value Justin Fields? I don't know if they value him enough to make the sort of move that it would take to go up to 4 to get him. But if he starts to slide into that 7, 8, 9 range, now I think we might be talking about something. So, you know, I like where I think the rubber could hit the road there. They've got relationships with Miami, obviously, at number 6. I think if Pitts and Chase are off the board, Miami might consider moving down. They've got, you know, I mean, obviously Detroit's there and Matt Patricia's in the building in New England. He knows the Detroit people. The Lions are looking to trade down. And then Carolina has a director of player personnel in Pat Stewart, who used to work in New England, who has all kinds of relationships in the Patriots building. So I look at that sort of alley of picks there at 6, 7, 8, where if a quarterback they like, and I think they've got some interest in Fields, were to fall in that range, you know, maybe they might look at the idea of going up.
Do you want to get in on our Julian Edelman bet?
Sure.
Paulie, give Albert the bet.
Albert, since you're a Boston guy, you'll like this. I made the bet that Julian Edelman will attempt to play professional football for the Buccaneers next year instead of just going flat retirement. Attempt to.
And its stake is a pie to the face.
The stakes. Oh, so I got to take a pie to the face if I'm wrong.
Well, you want to be in with Paulie and say that Edelman will at least attempt to play for the Buccaneers?
I'm going to say he won't.
Okay. All right.
His knees bone on bone, guys. I don't know.
I can't see it.
Who knows? I mean, maybe he decides with 6 games left he wants to do it. And I know he's got aspirations in Hollywood and everything else, and maybe those don't work out, and he decides I got to go be a football player again. I don't know. I'm not counting on it.
But
right
is Gronk
now.
Playing this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was the one for me. So, like, I Dan, like, you're right. Like, because, like, I look back, like, I was in the Super Bowl standing next to Rob Gronkowski. After the Patriots beat the Rams, I was standing next to Rob Gronkowski in that locker room after the Super Bowl. And I was convinced he was done. And he retired shortly thereafter. And I thought, this guy's just had it with football. And a year later, he's coming back. So I guess anything's possible.
Enjoy this week, Albert. Always appreciate you joining us, and thank you. We'll talk to you
soon. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches. Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Alex Smith, he is the former Utah star, went to the 49ers, also went to the Kansas City Chiefs. Washington football team had one of the more serious, severe, near fatal injuries in football history and decided to announce his retirement recently. And Alex Smith joining us on the program. Do you feel like a former player now?
You know, it's funny because, you know, through the injury, I kind of almost fell into that as well. Like I was on the brink of former football player for a while. So I felt like I've dabbled in this pool before. And so, yeah, it's not unnatural for me.
But also, like, is your routine the same? Like, are you still training, working out? How does that work?
Yeah, I think my routine very much this time of year is the same. Yeah, I still mix it up. I love enjoying. I mean, as a quarterback, listen, you know, me getting under a squat rack, you know, 365 days a year isn't practical, nor does it help me be a better quarterback. So for the last several years, I've enjoyed doing different things in the off season as far as training goes. And I still do those things. So that part of my life hasn't changed. I think here as, you know, as we creep towards summer and fall, obviously that's going to be the true test, you know, because for every fall for the last, you know, 25 plus years of my life, it's revolved around football. And, you know, that obviously, is set to change. So, I'm excited for it. You know, I know it's not always going to be a smooth transition, but I look forward to the unknown and what lays ahead.
But is it your mind or your body that has to be convinced right now? Like,
my mind, without a doubt, my mind, my body has nothing to do with it. My body could, I could still roll. I'm in better shape than I was a year ago. I mean, I think the further I get removed from, this injury, I'm only getting stronger. So my body feels better and better now.
But your body reminds you, there's certain times of the year where you go, I'm supposed to be doing this, like late July or August. Like, what are you going to be like on a Sunday in September?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great question. I don't know if I'm, you know, if I totally know what that's going to be like, you know, if I'm ready for it. And obviously time will tell when we get there. I do think, yeah, I mean, for a chunk of my life, yeah, that I've always had that release, you know, to go to lace up cleats and get back out on the field and, you know, push yourself in that kind of environment. And you can't simulate that anywhere else. You can't get that feeling, that rush, that sensation anywhere else. And so it is incredibly unique. So we'll see. We'll see if I do miss it. I feel at this point I'm in a great place. I you know, I've played a ton of football. I'm looking forward to all the things I can go do with my family and my kids, things that I've put off for a long time because of football.
When did you have that epiphany that you went, okay, I'm good with this?
Honestly, the first time I ever thought it, that it first hit me, this is no joke. I was, I went, skiing and snowboarding with my kids. And it was something that I'd put off for a long time because of football ever since. I haven't been since college. And then when the injury happened, I doubted if I'd ever be able to go again. And, my dad is, my parents have taken my kids. So they're pretty decent skiers at this point. I haven't ever been with them, you know, and I grew up, my dad taught me to ski when I was 2 years old. I grew up going with my family and it was always this family environment. So I got to go this year. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience, for me, full of the same range of emotions. And the night before I had a ton of anxiety, couldn't sleep, you know, wondering about my leg and how it hold up. And then to get out there with my kids and my dad also, and for all of us to be on the mound together and my mom, and, you know, it was an amazing experience. So for me, yeah, there was a moment where we paused on the side of the mountain and my two boys were next to me and my dad was there as well. And yeah, it definitely hit me that I want more of that. You know, I want to chase more of that. I've been putting that off for a long, long time and I can go do that now. And the reason I can go do it is partly because I pursued football, you know, that I knew if I pushed football as hard as I could, all the other things in life, I wouldn't have any limitations. So I'm excited to go knock down some more walls that I've built up.
Yeah, but I thought it was a little pretentious of you to hold a press conference on the ski mountain there to announce that you were retiring. I mean, nobody was there, but, you know, you had your moment, had your press conference. And I thought all along the last month or so, 6 weeks, that you would join Urban and go to Jacksonville and help tutor Trevor Lawrence. But I didn't know the competitor in you that wants to start. You know, like, do I want to be a mentor? And so I wondered how difficult was that decision?
Oh, I think you hit it. I battled that a lot internally, that role. And I have no problem, obviously, mentoring. I love it. In fact, you know, being a young quarterback, especially a high draft pick and expectations. And I enjoy talking about the way not to do it, you know, for me. How I struggled with those expectations and anxiety and, you know, trying to get validation every single day. And I felt like I never allowed myself that process to grow into that franchise quarterback. I felt like I had to be that day one and put a ton of pressure on myself to be that. And it just mounted and mounted. And it was this cycle that was not productive at all. So I enjoy, you know, trying to help obviously, other young quarterbacks not go down that road. You know, and there's a better way to do it. But I do struggle with the sense of doing it in a role where you're playing, you know, and preparing and to be the starter and to go out there and do that versus the backseat that you're really now, you know, obviously it's a lot of talk. It's a lot of talk, less playing. And so struggled if I wanted to do that, what that looked like. All those things, but Jacksonville definitely was, same thing. It was something that was really interesting to me. Coach Myron and I are still close to this day. So, you know, for the fact that I'll be close to 20 years down the line and he's now in the pros and to think about potentially helping him build that thing was exciting to me. But in the end, you know, I think all those other things, won out.
But if somebody offered you a starting job, if Washington said, hey, would we be having this conversation or would it be a different conversation?
Yeah. Oh, maybe. I mean, I think for me, I wanted to see all the options out there. I wanted to see everything that was on the table, obviously including retirement, and then make the most informed decision I could. I didn't want to rush anything. I wanted to see, everything that was out there. And so I felt like I did that. And based off all of those options, you know, I at this point I'm moving forward with retirement. You know, I don't think you ever want to never say never, but I'm full steam ahead with that at this point.
He's Alex Smith, former football player. You know, your one leg got all the attention. It's your other leg that I'd like to give some attention to today.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, like that, it's done a lot of work there. Never gets any coverage, Alex.
Never. And, you know, and I stole some muscle from it too, my right leg from my left. So my left's been really, you know, picking up the slack, and it's been shorthanded. So, you know, it's amazing what the human body can do. And I remember when they were explaining the procedure to me in the hospital, and I'm like, wait, you're going to make my good leg? You're going to make it weaker. You know, we're going to take one of my quad muscles. And I remember thinking at that point, my left leg was everything. I mean, the only way I got around was jumping around on my left leg at all. I mean, I kept thinking, well, we're going to make this weaker so that I can, you know, and this one, it might not even work, you know, is what they keep telling you. And so it's funny now looking back, they tell you that your left leg will adapt and you'll be surprised at how strong it will get. And, they were right. Funny, those doctors were right. It's crazy how the human body can adapt. And I feel like my left leg's probably stronger than it was, but before the injury and the operation where they took my muscle.
You remember the last time we had you in person was in Minneapolis.
I remember it well.
And you got traded 5 hours later.
Yep.
When you came in to do that interview, did you know you were going to be traded?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Okay. Good point.
It was one of those things like the, you know, basically the trade had been done. Nothing had been signed or anything, but they're, you know, still working out the details, essentially a you know, you're signing an extension as well. But yeah, that was all basically kind of in the works and pretty much done at that point where I was with you guys that day.
What's it like though, when you know, And you're going to see, Matt Ryan's probably going to see this. You know, the veterans see this. Aaron Rodgers is seeing this. When all of a sudden you see the future and you go, we certainly could have used that draft pick on somebody who could help us this year. So when the Chiefs take Patrick Mahomes, you know your days are numbered? Did you feel your days were numbered?
You know, I think there were a couple things. Yeah, I mean, well, obviously they're taking we moved up to take Patrick early. So I knew, you know, no question, obviously the future was in him. I think for me, I was going into my 13th year and I could either let this distract me from continuing to play good football, play winning football, you know, and certainly there were a lot of, you know, media distractions that try to pit us against each other. Or, you know, I could choose not to buy into that and really not let it distract me from what I wanted to go do and continue down my road towards trying to reach my potential and play the best, you know, football I could play, which I felt like I was still going down that road. So I think through everything I'd been through, it was really me determined to not, you know, essentially here, not let this become another distraction for me. And I, you know, I think thankfully, and proud of the fact that, you know, everybody included in that, Patrick, you know, Coach Reed, the entire organization chose not let that be what everybody was trying to make it be, you know, that it could be done a different way, that we could coexist, we weren't pitted against each other. And so, yeah, and ended up having probably one of the best years of my career, maybe the best, in the face of that, and essentially determined to tell myself that if I played good football, I was going to have a job, you know, or I could let this distract me and not play good football, and then it would become this self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
You made it tough on all the comeback players of the year that will follow you, because probably not a lot of them. Well, did you nearly die? Did you nearly lose your leg? Well, Alex Smith did. Like what did you come back from? You know, like you really made it tough.
You know, I think that, it's hard. I mean, football, the crazy thing is, I think there's so much that goes on that doesn't get seen. I mean, obviously this is one of the most violent games on the planet, and the carnage, you know, like the amount of guys that are up for comeback player of the year every single year and what they go through behind the scenes to get back, the surgeries, the toll this game takes on the human body. There's so many guys that deserve recognition. Certainly, obviously, what happened with me was unique, you know, in the sense of obviously the breaking my leg and then the infection on top of it. So, no, I mean, everybody, you know, there's so many guys that deserve recognition for what they put in, especially this time of year when no one's looking.
Yeah, but if they come back from meniscus tear or something like that, like turf toe, come on, Alex. I mean, you know, you made it tough. You did. You made it tough for all these other people. How do you look in shorts, by the way? Does your legs, like you?
So it's funny you ask. Like, yeah, it took me a long time to be able to wear shorts, you know, and show my leg. It was a long time before I could even own that this was me, that I wanted, that I was proud of my leg.
Do you have your shorts on
now? It's not pretty, Dan.
Do you have shorts on right now?
I have pants on. I would show it off, but I do have pants on.
Take your pants off right now. Let me see what you look like, Alex.
No, it's not pretty, but I am proud of it, you know, and what it's been through and what it means to me. But yeah, it took me a long time before I could show it off and flaunt it, you know, and that I could own it. Yeah.
Thank you. It's been great watching you. From you know, the days in Utah to where you are today, and you know, you get to spend time with your family, and I think, although I want to know what it's like, you know, because when I left ESPN, I went home and I didn't have a job for 6 months. You know, I was going to spend time with the kids, and I got home for about 2 weeks, and I went, oh my God, what am I doing here? So
I think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, and I'm not planning. You can't do nothing, you know, I can't do nothing. So I got to find something, but I think, you know what it is. Can I find a balance, you know?
Good luck, Alex. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.